Hi, and welcome to the Triathlon Age Group Journey Podcast. My name is Matt Sommer, and with me today are my co-hosts, Jay Kinney and Jillian Carlson. On today's episode, we're excited to have our first guest, Katie O'Brien, who will share her journey on being a coach and age grouper herself. We're also going to talk about what we've been up to this past week, and in some instances, what we haven't been up to. But first and foremost, we would all like to express our sincere gratitude for all the words of encouragement, support, and excitement that each and every one of you have shared with us in regards to last week's episode. Having you all along for this journey fills our hearts and makes us even more excited to share these fascinating stories. So let's get started.
Here we are on the second episode, and we're 1 week removed from St. George, and it's a good time to look at, I'm curious what your guys' recovery has been like. Did you do anything different with the end of season race than you might have done after another race? Or what did recovery week look like for you guys?
Well, I think it was a really bad decision to do a race right before Halloween, because that means we got bowls of candy around when you're sitting around not training. So I've been eating a lot of candy. It's been not good from that front.
Yeah, this week's definitely been a struggle trying to get back to normalcy. And what is normal? I think that's different for everybody. I came off some terrible flights coming home from St. George. I did not get home to North Carolina until Tuesday morning around 2 a.m. Travel definitely took a toll on me. Fortunately, I think anybody that travels, my bike was in one piece. So it's a success. I'll take that. Happy to see that. But getting back to work, just getting back to normal, trying to figure out what a normal training schedule looks like again has definitely been a challenge this week for me.
How about you, Jillian?
Do I dare say my bike might still be sitting in the bike box, Allen, in the garage? I have not unpacked my TT bike yet, which is not normal for me, I would say. Typically, after most of my races, probably because I just was going back to back all year long. It was quickly get that bike unpacked, get some recovery spin in, and start thinking about the next race. And for me, this one was a little bit different coming off such a busy year. I intentionally forced myself to probably take a longer break, one that, you know, most people probably would have taken after doing a full. And I just didn't quite have the opportunity. So I decided to do it a little bit different, step outside my comfort zone of rushing back into training and getting back on the bike, and left the TT packed up. I told myself to wait a week. I think I made it to Thursday, and I do happen to have a second bike. So I put my roadie on the kicker and did do a easy spin on Thursday. But I'm not going to lie. I think, The kit I raced in on race day, it was nothing new on race day except your race kit. And they designed the chamois just a little bit different than the traditional race suit that we had. And it's not one that favors me. And I think also in the cold, my seat was probably a little bit colder and harder than normal. So I really was pretty uncomfortable for a lot of the bike. And I think that carried in. So really have not had a strong desire to go sit back on a bike. It's starting to come back, which is great. But I will say it's been a little bit of a different recovery for me than typical. And I'm becoming okay with it, though I do still have that deep drive and desire to get back into the training and the routine. But I'm also embracing the opportunity to, you know, hang out a little bit more with my kids, or honestly do a little bit of what Daniela Reef has been doing, which is purging, going through the house, getting to some of those projects that maybe have sat on the back burner for a few years.
Yeah. I sweated for the first time today planting two trees. So yeah, that's definitely, I'm way overdue on the house chores. No doubt about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think recovery is different for everyone. And I mean, depending on whether or not we choose to start doing a little bit more strength training or get out there and do some other activities. And a lot of people have been trying to get me out there to play pickleball at the country club I work at. And I'm just like, I don't know about that. But anyway, just trying new things.
So. Good stuff. Well, I think, Matt, you said thanks to the folks that have been listening. We definitely have to celebrate as we're recording this. We have about 92 downloads. So we're close to 100 on our first pod. I think that's pretty cool. And certainly I didn't have any expectations. So that was way more than I would have imagined after number one. So
I was shocked. Like in the first day or two, I was getting just some, you know, Facebook messages, texts from some friends, other people that I know that I've met through the sport, just saying, hey, man, that was great. Really exciting. Like just looking at the direction it was going. So, you know, the feedback and the comments that I've gotten personally have really overwhelmed me and looking forward to the next one. So this is exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, why don't we kick off number two? We have a guest here today and I'm really excited to have our guest, Katie O'Brien, on. Katie is really a huge inspiration for me. She was my mentor for my very first sprint triathlon, the Osprey. She had heard through a friend at work that I was trying one, and she didn't hesitate to reach out and, you know, throw that triathlon family thing in terms of telling me everything about it and answering all my questions. And so, Katie, a huge thank you to that. One of my favorite stories about Katie was when she crossed the finish line at Ironman Maryland for the first time. And I had to go back and get the words right because you put it in your Instagram post that Mike Riley called you across the line as Catherine O'Brien, first timer. You're an Ironman. You're a happy Ironman. You got an extra treatment from Mike Riley. And I point that story out because Katie always has a smile on her face when she's racing, start to finish. It's just an infectious smile that people really excited to see and are following into triathlon, which I think is really cool. More about Katie. She's a mother of two kids and balances her training and her coaching really well. And I think we're really excited to talk to her about how she does that. Big inspiration to the women in her neighborhood. You seem to have a great neighborhood family of runners and triathletes. So that's really, really cool. And her husband, Andrew, super supportive, goes to most of the races. They have a trailer that they travel to a lot of races together. He's in an Irish band, Gaelic Mishap, which if you're in Baltimore in the Irish bar scene, you've probably seen them. We're just really pumped to have Katie on. And welcome, Katie.
Thanks for having me.
We're going to get into interviewing Katie in a minute, but as always, we want to do our quote of the week and get everyone's take on that, including Katie. So, Matt, fire away. What do you got for us this week?
Well, every week when I do my quotes at work, you know, there's usually an underlying tone to them, something that it's not necessarily going on in my world, but it's something that just kind of is the theme for the week. You know, coming off St. George, I've already touched on it, but I think the theme of the week was recovery. You cannot get fruit from the tree year round. I think that speaks volumes right there. Is we have growing seasons, we have harvest seasons, we have planting seasons. You can't be on your A game. You got to have downtime. A hard concept for a lot of people to understand. I think it's very symbolic in all areas of our life. You have ebbs, you have lows and ups and downs. You know, this week for me, trying to remind myself that I cannot be race primed all the time. You got to let some stuff go. You got to come back to it. At the end of the day, it's important to remember you cannot get fruit from the tree year round.
What do you think, Katie? You want to kick us off? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, absolutely. I love that quote. I think it's really important to take some time to step back. I know I, towards the end of my season, start to kind of lose that drive and look forward to doing something a little bit different in the off season. You know, Matt, you mentioned focusing a little extra on strength training and, you know, we ski, so I like to get out and hit the slopes every now and again, and just having the chance to reset, reconnect with my family and, you know, have my body recover from my season is huge. That's really important to me.
Yeah. In the past have wanted to believe that quote does not apply to me and that I can get fruit from the tree year round and that I don't need a break outside of like a day here and there when life happens. But I think for this year, this season, after what, 2.5 to 3 years of not really taking much of a break, more than a couple of days for travel or family during vacations, that's why it was a more of a forced rest for me. We went hiking the day after on Sunday after the boys raced in St. George, and that was awesome and refreshing. But after that, I've really tried to be careful about just taking that forced rest and actually embracing that quote and seeing what that does for me, and hoping that'll really pay off in allowing me to have a deeper recovery than I've really ever let myself get in the past.
Yeah. My coach wants me to take 2 weeks off completely, and I've never done that in 7 years.
Yeah.
I texted her Thursday and said, this is awful. I don't know what to do. I don't know how to handle this. But I think that's exactly the point, is you want it to be awful. You want that fire to smolder underneath and come back to you with that renewed vigor and that feeling of freshness. So I'm trying to stay focused on that and know down, you know, I got 1 week down, 1 week to go, but it's headed in the right direction.
It's funny, Jay, you said that. And I think Katie and Jillian also echoed this, is we all talked about the physical aspect. And it's not just the physical, it's the mental. When we have those two pieces lined up, we are primed, we are moving forward. And during the race, at some point, when the mental and physical create a wedge and one goes one direction, one goes the other, that's when things start to kind of fall apart, and we have to be disciplined to be able to bring them back together by adapting. I think Sam Long today on one of his Instagram posts was talking about how his mental aspect was not lined up with the physical. And he was kind of echoing that same point on his Instagram post today. And I read that and I was like, huh, right there, that whole mental and physical need to be lined up for great things to happen.
Yeah. So true. So true. Well, let's get started with Katie's journey. Katie, why don't you give us a recap of how you got into triathlon and how long you've been doing this, and maybe some highlights if you want.
Sure. So if you were to look back at me in high school, like, you can ask my soccer coach. I played club soccer growing up, and you could ask him. I would have been the last person he would have ever expected to be in endurance sports. I was the one that complained relentlessly every time we had to run a lap around the soccer field. I hated running. And I played soccer, but I was definitely not an athlete. I wound up coaching in high school and college because I could not execute myself. So I knew everything there was to know about the game, but I was not very good at doing it. So in 2012, I was engaged, preparing for my wedding, and my soon-to-be sister-in-law was my maid of honor. She wanted to do something to get in shape for my wedding, and she thought, hey, you know, I've seen something about a local try-a-try, and she grew up swimming, thought, that's always something I've kind of wanted to do. Will you sign up with me? And I just thought, oh, crap, like, I hate running. I've never had a proper swim lesson. I haven't been on a bike since I was probably 12 or 13, but I wanted to support her. So I was like, all right, you know, I'll do it. So I signed up. She calls me two nights before the race. So I didn't train, and I think I'm going to back out. You've got to be kidding me.
Oh my gosh.
Backed out, and I'm thinking, well, I paid for this. I'm going. So I showed up. I cursed my way through that race. I certainly had not prepared well enough. I didn't know much about the sport at all. Crossed the finish line, felt that first rush of adrenaline of crossing a finish line, went home and signed up for my next race that same day. I was instantly hooked.
What a great story. That was your sister-in-law, you said, or future sister-in-law?
Yeah, my sister-in-law now. Yeah.
Boy.
No.
What race did you have be your next one? Did you stick with that short try-a-try distance, or did you go longer?
I went to a full sprint. I mean, that certainly wasn't a large jump. I stuck with short distance for the first several years of racing. So I did a sprint up in Downingtown, Pennsylvania, and then I participated with Team in Training, raising money for Leukemia and Lymphoma Society for sprints for a couple of years after that. And then 2015 was my first venture into longer distance. That was my first 70.3 before I wanted to get one in, thinking it would be a one and done experience before we started a family. And, you know, we all know how that goes.
So what 70.3 was that?
That was Beach to Battleship down in North Carolina.
I did that one. Yeah. Awesome.
Great race.
Yeah. Back before it became 70.3 North Carolina. Absolutely. That's a fast swim. I bet that was a swim PR, huh?
Yep. That swim was amazing. Yeah. The rest of the race, you know, again, I was early on in my tri career and certainly not experienced with nutrition, and I felt it, but it was a great race. I definitely want to go tackle it again at some point.
Nice.
Very cool. So that's North Carolina in 2015, you said?
Yeah.
Okay. What has your racing been like from 2015 to now? That's still 7 years worth of racing and other family and life stuff. Run us through that.
Yeah. So I've had a couple of years off with pregnancies and raising young kids, but after having my son in January of 2017, I kind of wanted to give myself a challenge, something to work for me. I got back into short course racing that summer after having him, and then into 2018 decided, sorry if you can hear my dog. In 2018 decided I wanted to take a step up and go for something really big. You know, I had been pregnant and nursing and taking care of a young kid for the better part of a year and a half. And, you know, I felt like I needed something to challenge my body in a different way and set my own goals. So I decided to sign up for my first Ironman, which was Maryland in 2018. So did that when my son was...
I was there for that one.
Were you?
Boy, Katie and I were saying we've never raced together, but now Matt and Katie have raced twice.
There we go.
Apparently.
Very cool.
And we did
That's
know.
That's right.
Yeah. So that was, my son was a year and a half old. It was certainly a huge challenge to get the training in, but I found that to be kind of cathartic for me after being, you know, touched out essentially for a year and a half with a newborn completely relying on you. It was nice to kind of step out and do something for myself. And again, I thought I would be a one and done full Ironman, and didn't turn out that way either. I had my daughter Isla in 2019, and then signed up for Ironman Maryland again in 2021 when she was two, and completed that last year. So I've been kind of back and forth between long distance and short distance with a couple of years of no racing scattered in there. It's been a pretty up and down 7 years, but it's been exciting.
Now, I got a quick question for you. We've talked, being that you've done Maryland twice and sure. I've done Maryland twice. 2018, how many jellyfish did you see?
Zero.
I am right there with you, Katie. None. You know, I look back and everybody's like, well, they've always been there. I'm like, they were not. I did Maryland in 14. I did Maryland in 18, never saw one jellyfish. And then they moved the race to earlier in September. And I really think that's what the problem was. But did you have bad experiences with the jellyfish last year?
I got attacked by the jellyfish last year. They were everywhere. You felt like you were swimming through angel hair pasta.
Exactly.
It was awful. It won't stop me from going back. I love that race. Cambridge holds a really special place in my heart. I love racing there. But it's, if they could move it back another week or two where it used to be, I think it would certainly help that.
Katie, so you did, if I understood that right, you did an Ironman the year after you had your kids, both in both cases.
Yeah, my son was about a year and a half when I did the one after him, and my daughter had just turned two when I did the one after
her. Okay. What was that like? How did you fit the training in? What did you do to be able to do it all? I can't fathom it. What were your tricks?
I have a very supportive, you know, husband and family at home that certainly is a huge help, but it's getting creative with your time. You know, I'm up at 4:30 a lot of mornings. Jay, I know I saw you posting a lot of 4 a.m. videos on Instagram this year, so you're no stranger to that either. You know, I'm doing master swim classes at 8 p.m. after the kids are in bed. When they were really little, I was able to stick them in the jogging stroller or tow them along in the bike trailer and kind of have them involved in training. I was able to do that a little more with my son since it was just the one, rather than having both of them in tow. But, you know, it certainly wasn't ideal, but there were a lot of Saturdays where I'd split my long ride up. I'd get up in the morning and get 3 or 4 hours in before breakfast, and then they were still at an age where they were napping, and I'd get another 2 hours in while they napped in the afternoon. And
gotcha.
You know, it was getting as creative as I could with the time that I had available, and it worked.
With kids those ages, did you find recovery harder? Obviously, having younger kids, sleep, making sure that they're sleeping through the night. I've got a 17-year-old, and even training for a full now, it's like sleep was so important. And I can't imagine having a one-year-old and a three-year-old. How'd you balance that?
It's certainly tough. I was very blessed with kids that were at least decent sleepers. My son was a great sleeper. He still is. My daughter, not quite as good, but she was better than most, I will say. So, you know, from a relatively early age, they were sleeping through the night, which allowed me to get to bed early and get at least a decent night of sleep. But it's certainly tough because you can't come home from your long ride or your long run and
just put your feet up,
rest. You got to be on, and they're, you know, they need you to get their milk and they need you to get their snacks, and you're on your feet 24/7. So it certainly makes it difficult.
I'd love to circle back a minute on the split of your ride. Physiologically, I think people freak out about doing that in their training and think that that's not a full ride, or you're not getting benefit out of that. But I actually think that probably is something most of us could adapt or put into our training to make it fit better into our lives. So I don't know, Matt, physiologically, you still get the training, you're getting the mileage in your legs.
Absolutely. There's definitely the training effect there. I've had a few athletes that I've worked with just from a time perspective where we've had to do split runs, especially on that long run, because, you know, at the end of the day, during an Ironman, you're running in the afternoon. So it's get up and do an hour run in the morning, come back to an hour and a half in the afternoon. It's not a bad thing. And I think depending on whose schedule it is you're working with, at the end of the day, it's getting the volume in.
And probably better than not getting it in at all.
Yeah.
That was always my reasoning. If I had 6 hours split over the course of the day, it was better than only doing three. And, you know, to some degree, you're still biking on tired legs when you get that second session in later in the day. And it, you know, it's certainly not ideal to do every weekend, but it worked better than I thought it would, honestly.
Yeah. Katie, when you were pregnant, did you continue doing light volume training? Were you training pretty heavy, or did you just take that time off? And I actually would ask, while you were pregnant, and then even after you had your babies, were you the type that really just took that time off and completely let your body focus on raising your kids, or did you ease back in right away, or did you just go full throttle?
During pregnancy, I kept a reasonable training volume. I certainly wasn't training for half marathons, but I tried to keep running as long as I could. I think I made it till about 34 weeks with my son. It was a little earlier with my daughter that I had to stop because second pregnancy is a little tougher on your body. So I did continue running. I continued swimming because I didn't feel any lighter than I possibly could in the pool. So that always felt really good to get in the water and swim. But I did stay off my bike for the most part. That got to be pretty uncomfortable, and I didn't want to be out on the road, certainly on my bike. And then postpartum, I was released with both kids. I had C-sections with both of them, so that added a whole different element to recovery, but was released to start light training around 6 weeks and was so anxious, kind of chomping at the bit just to get back out there. So I would stick them in the stroller and just go for a walk that would turn into a very, very slow jog, and I built up from there. And it felt good to get out. I would, when I had my daughter, I would drop my son off at daycare in the morning and we'd go for a half a mile or a mile jog and then sit on the front porch and I'd have my coffee while she napped. And it was actually a great routine that we got into, and I really enjoyed that time with her.
Nice. Yeah. I think I'd like to dive into Dara Multisport, right? That's your coaching business now, going on year two. Is this the second year or?
So we're going into our third year. We started in September 2020, right in the middle of COVID. So definitely not the most ideal time to start, but there were a lot of people looking to take on a new challenge with some newfound time at home, which was nice, and been at it for a little over 2 years now.
Okay. What is kind of the profile of the people you're working with, and what kind of services do you typically provide?
So the vast majority of my athletes are either looking to get into the sport, they're completely new to triathlon and looking for somebody to kind of coach them into their first race, or women that have done, you know, maybe two or three and they're looking to either improve or step up to a new distance that they haven't tried before. So it's been a really wide range of different types of women from all around the country. Most of my services are virtual, so I've got clients from Baltimore to Minnesota to Southern California that I work with. And it's been really fun getting to see the different types of people and life circumstances that they're coming from and bring them into the sport and make them or help them make the most of their potential.
Yeah. What do you think you've learned in your own training being a coach?
I've certainly learned the value of recovery. that was something I never honestly had really prioritized or thought about when I was building my training plans prior to coaching, was making sure I had those step back weeks and that time for recovery. But that's really when your body makes those gains. It's really important to allow that time. So that's something I've approached a little bit differently. And then I've also been incredibly interested in reading a lot of literature. I just took a class on training with female cycle and hormones. And that's something that I think is very early on in research and studies and something that we have a lot to learn about when trying to optimize our female athletes' training.
So just out of curiosity, what got you interested in coaching? Had you worked with a coach previously that kind of inspired you to want to come into coaching?
I mentioned that I did Leukemia and Lymphoma Society's team and training, and I did that for 2 years, my second and third year in the sport. And so I had a coach through that. She was coaching a group of women to the Iron Girl Triathlon in Columbia. But after those 2 years, I wanted to stay involved with the organization, but the continual fundraising got to be a little bit much. So I signed on with them as a mentor, so almost like an assistant coach. And I worked as a mentor with team and training for 3 summers, helping women, most of whom were doing their first triathlon, train for Iron Girl and for the Nations Tri in DC. And really, really loved getting to bring new athletes into the sport. It really just lit a fire under me to continue encouraging women to get involved. That atmosphere at Iron Girl was so uplifting, seeing all these women encourage each other. And I fell in love with that part of it as well. So I did that for about 3 years. They unfortunately had to stop their tri program with team and training due to funding issues. And sitting around during COVID, my husband was like, "Hey, you know, you really loved that. Help some friends on the side kind of get into the sport. Why don't you sign up for some coaching classes and get your certifications?" You know, we had some time off during COVID, some downtime at home, and he was the one that actually put that thought in my mind. So January 2020, I started doing that.
No, it's funny. Jay mentioned before we started just your smile when you're racing. And it's funny, as I sit here, obviously we can see each other and hearing you talk about, you know, getting women engaged in sport and getting new athletes engaged in the sport, you're smiling. And it's obvious your passion for that piece of working with, you know, first-time triathletes, particularly women. It just sounds like that's your niche and your natural calling. It's right there.
Yeah, I love it. It's almost as rewarding to me to see one of my athletes cross the finish line of their first race or hit a goal time or, you know, finish their first Ironman as it is doing all of those things myself. I was at Ironman Maryland this year volunteering at the finish line and got to catch one of my athletes crossing the finish line of her first Ironman. And I think I cried more than she did. It was an incredible experience to be there to see her accomplish a dream and to play a small part in that. Just was incredible.
I got to agree with you on that. From the coach perspective, it is very rewarding when I'm tracking my athletes or if I'm there racing with an athlete to see them conquer that goal. You hate to say it is almost it's like a proud daddy moment. Yeah. You almost tear up a little and it's just kind of like, wow, you know, it's neat to see it happen. So 100% agree.
So Katie, if you could give a new triathlete a bit of advice, and even somebody who's been in the sport for multiple years, would you give them advice, different advice? And if so, what would that be?
I have to admit, Matt took my advice last week when he mentioned to only compete with yourself. You know, I think it's really important to meet yourself where you are, set your own personal goals, and go out there and perform to the best of your ability. So I think aside from that, I would have to tell most new triathletes to not be afraid to dream big, to not underestimate themselves. I find a lot of the newer athletes that I'm coaching that are getting into the sport really doubt themselves, or they just don't fully grasp what their body can do and how powerful their body truly is. And they don't give themselves the credit that they deserve. So, you know, don't be afraid to set big goals and to push for them. It might take some time to get there, but we can do a lot more than we think we're capable of.
I always like to say, go out there and wow yourself.
Yeah, absolutely.
Has there been something that surprised you about coaching that you didn't foresee, whether positive or negative?
I think it's the personal attachment that I feel to each of my athletes out there on the race course. I mean, when it's a race day for them, I truly am invested in what's going on that day. I love when they're doing Ironman events because I can at least get the tracking alerts and updates as they're racing if I'm not able to be there. But, you know, I knew I loved coaching and mentoring, and I knew it would feel great to help people achieve their goals, but I didn't expect how much joy that would bring me to really see somebody accomplish a big goal of theirs. I just had my first Kona qualifying athlete in Chattanooga a few weeks ago, and watching her, you know, I was sitting here all night. My husband was probably sick of me. I'm like, she's in fourth, she's in fifth. And I'm all excited and I'm crying watching her cross the finish line. You know, I did not expect that emotional attachment to it that I've had.
Do you feel like you're watching your athlete fuels your training desire, and knowing that your athletes are looking at you and just kind of watching you? Do you feel like that fuels your passion and desire to get out there too?
Absolutely. You know, all of us, I think, can relate that we're really busy and sometimes things pile up and that motivation might slip a little bit when things are getting incredibly busy and crazy. And knowing that I've got athletes out there who are nurses and single moms and teachers and still pushing through and doing all of that training because they know I'm holding them accountable makes me hold myself accountable, because if they're doing it, I need to show them that it's possible too.
So, all right, I got one question. After a race, what's your favorite go-to meal? What's your favorite recovery meal? Like, I hate to say splurge, but like after a race, are you a sweet girl, a salty girl? Do you want a drink? Like, what is it that you want?
I am all about salty food. I love salty food. There is nothing better than sitting down and getting a big greasy cheeseburger and French fries and a beer. That is my go-to post big race.
Nice.
Reward.
What kind
foods.
Of beer do you like? IPAs? Or what's your take?
It depends on the time of year. This time of year, I'm into the porters and darker beers. In the summer, you know, I'll reach for a lager. I'm not a huge IPA fan, but some of them I'll drink. But
yeah, it's an acquired taste. I like the IPAs. How about you, Jay? How about you, Jillian? What's your go-to after a race?
You go first, Jillian.
Oh, I'm gonna side with Katie. I rarely eat a burger during the year, but after a race and fries, the soggier the better. Those tend to be my favorite, and so I'll hold out until after a race for that loaded burger and fries. No mayo, of course, because who would do that? But yeah, load it up. But definitely, you got to get the soggy fries for me.
Yeah, I guess we got a trifecta here of salt. I hunt down chicken broth now like it's gold. So I brought a can of it to St. George. I don't know if you guys saw that, but just in case they didn't have it at the finish line, I was gonna make sure I had some chicken broth. And
now, is that for recovery or just?
I think it's awesome for recovery.
Okay, so you do that for recovery, not splurging.
To me, it's splurging, is it's like 1,500 milligrams of salt. I would never drink that otherwise. So to me, that's a splurge, I guess. But yeah, no, it's a recovery tool as well. But okay. I mean, bottom line is anything salty goes well at the end of the race.
Yeah, I think I struggle with that after a race. Like, I'm one of the ones where my eyes are bigger than my stomach, and this happens all the time. I'll sit there and I'll be like, oh, I want a pizza. Oh, I want this. Oh, I want this. But then I get it and I take one or two bites and I'm full. And it's a big struggle for me, especially it takes about 2 days for the hunger really to kick in for me. My eyes are definitely bigger. I can sit there and look at all the food and it all looks so good and I'm indecisive. Now, definitely salty though.
I do feel like it's different for me, at least, after an Ironman versus the half iron, like a 70.3 or shorter. Because I'm with you, Matt. After having only done 73s in Olympics, I finished those. I'm ready to eat. I'm ravenous. Like, I'll eat anything and everything. But when we did Placid, I found myself thinking that I was hungry, but we just were like, I don't want to eat anything. Until like 3 o'clock in the morning. And then it was like, okay, I'm famished now. Go ravage the fridge and the cupboards and put something together. Right. But I did find it was different. I don't know if you guys relate to that at all. If you find it's your hunger after a half distance versus a full is different.
I actually struggle after the shorter distance going hard, all out. It takes me probably an hour and a half to 2 hours to settle afterwards, where the half and the fulls, I felt like, oh yeah, I could eat. It's funny. I guess we just have a different reaction to it.
Yeah.
You will rarely see me turn down a meal.
I love it.
That's great. So, Katie, I want to know, you've done some cool races, short and long. What is your absolute favorite that you've done?
Oh, that's tough. So Rock Hall in Maryland is one of my absolute favorite places to race when I'm doing short course. It was my first Olympic. And the town, really small little Eastern Shore town, really quaint little place. And I just love racing there. I feel like I can really open up on that course and push myself. So that's always one of my favorite races. I try to do either the sprint or the Olympic there every year. But like I mentioned earlier, Cambridge certainly holds a special place in my heart. And I absolutely love racing in Cambridge. And I don't know that I will ever... you know, feel that same way. And I'm sure most people will say the same thing about their first Ironman. You can't recreate that experience. So I think Maryland is certainly well up there on my list of places to race.
I'll agree with you on Maryland. I mean, that town, Cambridge, just is so welcoming. It's such a quaint town. I love the waterfront aspect of it, running on the cobblestones. Always hot, always humid. Can't beat that. One of my favorite parts of the full, Katie, and you probably got this too. How about those personal notes
from the kids?
Those touch your heart. Every racer in their registration bag has a handwritten note from an elementary or middle school student at the local schools. And if those don't tug at your heart, I mean, that's just one of the neat, unique features of Ironman Maryland.
Yeah, the community really embraces the race. I think the vast majority of people that live there are out there on race day, either cheering on the athletes or volunteering. And it just creates this phenomenal atmosphere. They welcome the athletes into their community, unlike stories I have heard from some other venues that may be a little bit more hesitant to have an Ironman in town. Cambridge really welcomes it with open arms. So it makes it a really special experience.
Nice. So you just mentioned that being one of your most favorite races. What's your bucket list race?
I would love to go do a race in Europe, maybe Ironman Italy or maybe in Barcelona. I love to travel. We travel a ton. Even with the kids, it's changed a little bit, our style of travel, but we have always been really into travel. So I would love to get over a race in Europe. I was also watching the feed from South Africa this weekend, and man, what a cool place that would be to go race.
Yeah.
Certainly not anything feasible at the moment, but it would be incredibly cool to get to do that. But I will say I'll be tackling a bucket list race this summer. I am signed up for Placid, which I know you all have experience with. And if you can't tell, based on my list of previous races. I am a flatland lover. I thrive on the bike on flats. You know, I'm very much dial in and hold a steady RPM and power for a long period of time. So it's going to add a whole new challenge for me. I'm a little nervous about it. A whole new challenge for me to tackle the hills up in Placid.
Well, come on up to Northern Baltimore County, get a little bit of hills.
The beauty of Placid will occupy you. It's such a gorgeous course. So you can get lost in it. You definitely will feel the hills, but just keep looking down. It's all flat if you look down. That's kind of what I always tell myself.
Yeah, I'm excited. I've always said I would love to race there someday. I just think it looks like a phenomenal venue. And after tracking Jay the entire race day this summer, as soon as it opened up, I didn't allow myself to think too much about it and just pushed the register button because I knew I'd be thinking about it for a long time if I didn't just go ahead and do it. So we'll see how it goes.
It's a breathtaking venue, absolutely epic. I remember just going down Keene Descent and riding out there and a few other times throughout the race, you can smell the pine and you look out and you're like, wow, am I really out here? It's beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. The Adirondacks. Wow. There aren't many places, even off course, to just drive around and see the landscaping and everything. I'd love to live there one day.
So, Katie, of the three sports, which one do you find is either your favorite or kind of your go-to, the one that you prefer the most even?
Honestly, it changes depending on where I am in my training cycle sometimes. But I will say there is nothing better to me than being out on my bike. I love getting out on my bike. You know, being just on my own with my thoughts, enjoying the scenery, enjoying, you know, going fast. And that's my happy place. I typically default to running just because it's the easiest thing to do when the kids are driving me crazy. Just throw my shoes on and run out the door. But I will say that one is the hardest for me. It does not come naturally to me. It has always been the biggest challenge of the three to up my run game, and still to this day is the one that I struggle with the most.
When you're biking, do you tend to, so you get outdoors, do you ride with a group? Does your husband join you, or does he kind of sag along behind you, or do you go out completely on your own? What does that look like for you?
It depends on the week. It's a little bit tough with having such a tight schedule with the kids and the family, as far as when I can get out. My husband will ride with me, but that requires us having childcare. So he'll get out with me when he can, which is great. I have a few friends locally that train as well, and I'll go out with them when our times and our schedules align. But I certainly have no problem getting out and riding on my own either. It depends on what the week throws at me and when I'm available to get out there.
Will you run on the treadmill? Will you ride on the kicker? Or are you, nope, I'm outside? Like, every person's different. And, you know, it's interesting when you meet different people that are like, oh, I can't stand the treadmill, but that's the same person that'll sit on the kicker for 3 hours. I never understand that.
So I do a good bit of my training indoors just for ease. Most of my weekday workouts, aside from running, all my weekday bike workouts for the most part are on my kicker because I'm up doing them at 4:30 in the morning and, you know, I have to prioritize safety as well. Having the kicker has made that indoor training much more accessible and far less boring than my old dumb trainer staring at the wall. So I don't hate it as much as I used to, which is nice. I do have a treadmill at home as well. I try to avoid it as much as possible. I will jump on it for a few miles if needed, but I certainly prefer to get outdoors. And I've got a great local running club, but all local moms that I meet with, and they're all willing to get up and out the door and run at 5 in the morning, which is nice. Yes, exactly.
Get away from everybody. No, I'm just kidding. So what is the longest session you've ever done on your trainer and on your treadmill?
My longest trainer ride was training for Ironman Maryland last year, I had a 5.5 hour ride scheduled and it was pouring down rain and it was miserable. Certainly do not recommend. My longest treadmill run is probably no longer than 90 minutes, and that was just mind numbing to me. So I'll go out and run in just about any weather. I think there was a hurricane or something coming through town the day I did that.
That's good.
Yeah. I can't do it. I mean, I'll run on a treadmill all day long. I don't know why I can let my mind go numb. I've actually ran 26 miles on a treadmill training for a 50K here in North Carolina because it was freezing and snowing outside and the training needed to get done. As far as on the kicker, it's like 3 hours is my threshold. I went off that thing. I just can't do it. I don't know.
I certainly had a couple of breaks in there to get off, stretch, grab some snacks.
Let the blood come back.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So guys, I hate to do this, but being that single mom busy with balancing triathlon and kids sports, I do have to run and go drop my daughter off to volleyball. But I wanted to real quick say it was so great getting to know you a little bit more, Katie, and hearing about your story. And it's been great catching up with you, Matt and Jay. And I'm excited for next week and I wish I could help close out. But I also heard the dog ate some chicken bones. So I've got to go see what's up with him and then go drop the daughter off to volleyball. So thank you guys.
The life of a tri-mom.
Oh, man. It never ends. So I wish you guys the best.
Thanks,
then.
Jillian.
Until next
Thanks,
time.
Jillian.
Bye.
All right. Bye.
See ya. One of the things that Jillian was going to wrap up with was looking at races. I think first we'll start with congratulating all the Ironman Florida finishers this weekend as we're recording. I do need to note that the overall age group winner on the men's side was Daniel McParlin in 8:55.
That's blazing fast.
At Ironman Florida. That's incredible.
Yeah. I cannot fathom that.
I sure hope he's a future pro card recipient, but he lit it up. What an incredible. Incredible. So congratulations to those folks. Lots of races in Europe going on this week. I don't see any in the U.S., particularly from Ironman. I don't know if anybody else has races or athletes racing this week.
There was one big race today. We had the New York City Marathon going on, so it's one of the world's majors. So that was a big race going on. A couple friends of mine were racing, from what I could see, abnormally high temperatures. So I think it was a pretty tough day out there for age groupers. I even think I saw that Galen Root pulled out. He was our Olympic champion. I think U.S. top Olympic runner. He was in it and he ended up withdrawing at about 30K. So not sure if it was injury related or if it was just temperatures. Evidently, it was a pretty tough day out there because of the abnormal warm temps that they had up there today.
Wow.
So.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Good. Do you guys have any athletes racing in the next week?
Yeah, I've got one athlete doing Arizona as well. It'll be her first Ironman and really looking forward to seeing how she does. She's a very inspirational person. She's a teacher. She's a mom to two kids. She's a single mom. And so she's been working really hard to work this into her crazy schedule. And I'm really excited to go out there and watch her race next weekend.
These late fall races are a challenge. Katie, I don't know from your perspective, I get athletes that they get these knee-jerk reactions of, hey, I'm going to do an Ironman. And they're like, I want to do Florida or I want to do Arizona or Texas. And, you know, I always sit them down and I'm like, listen, let's talk this out. What time of day are you going to be training? Early mornings, late nights? Let's talk about like daylight. Let's talk about if you're not a morning person, when does the sun come up? When does the sun set? Are your kids in school? And like all these little logistical things that they don't consider. After you talk it out rationally with them, sometimes they're like, yeah, maybe I can't do a fall race. As single moms or families or this and that, it's if you've got to train early in the morning and the sun's not up till 7:30, or if you have to train after work and the sun's already down by 5:30, unless you like indoor training, it's a challenge.
That's a great point.
Yeah, I know she's had to work really hard to kind of weave it into her schedule. A lot of early mornings, late nights. She lives in Southern California, so fortunately the weather is still, you know, pretty conducive to long distance training in Southern California. But I think logistically that one worked really well for her to be able to get there with the family. It's drivable from home, and she made it work. She's done incredible. So I'm excited for her.
That's awesome. All right. Well, yeah, we're getting up on that hour, so we'll probably look to wrap this up here. I didn't mention it in my week off. Typically every year at this time, start cleaning out things, cleaning out the pain cave, you know, whatever, because I finally have time to do it. So I guess an off-season tip that I just looked into was recycling of old shoes, because I had changed my footwear this year because I had plantar fasciitis earlier in the year. So I had to unload a whole line of running shoes that pretty much caused the problem, but they were lightly worn. So I found two things. One, the local running store here, Charm City Run, had a recycled box, so for old and worn shoes. And then DSW for us here locally supports the Soles for Souls program, which is lightly used shoes you could turn in. But you also can go online to Soles for Souls and look up any zip code and find which stores are participating to turn in your lightly used shoes. So hopefully outfit somebody who needs them. So take a look at that in your off season rather than just throwing them in the trash. I think that's a great opportunity for all of us to consider. All right. Well, Katie, thank you so much for joining us.
Of course. Thanks so much for having me. This has been a lot of fun.
It was great hearing about it. And like I said earlier, you can just tell how passionate you are. Again, the smile's still there. And it's just, you know, I can really see how much you enjoy working with new athletes and particularly trying to empower women into the sport. So great job.
All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. You can reach us on email at triathlonagegroupjourney@gmail.com. And our Instagram is @triathlonagegroupjourney. You can now get it on every podcast platform you can find. We definitely know it's live, so you don't have to go to our website, but check it out and let us know. Give us some ideas, some thoughts. We'd love to hear from you. That's it. Talk to you next time.